me. I couldn't tell there was anything to it.
Really? Wasn't strong enough. Huh, okay.
Anytime you're ready.
Okay. Good morning, sir. My name is...
Okay. Both of you, I didn't install my hearing aid, so it's important that you speak distinctly and slowly and rather loud.
Okay.
It'll be just you. You'll be talking with Lady predominantly. I'm just here to record. So,
okay.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Good morning, sir. My name is Leigh Wilburn, and I'll be interviewing you. Could you please state your full name for the record?
Full name is Yule Richard Reed, nickname Dick Reed.
Okay. And sir, could you, well, first, just a disclaimer, this isn't going to be put out there to the press and to the media, and you won't go to jail like we talked about earlier.
Okay.
So anything you say here. Right. And more of the point of it is to get your wisdom and your knowledge and information that could help other legislators, or current legislators, sir. So what got you into politics initially?
I was raised in more or less a political family. Several of my great uncles and at least one uncle ran for a county office, so I was raised in that environment.
Right. Okay, and so what were the first issues that you saw a need to take up and that before you got into politics that kind of motivated you to move in that direction?
Well, actually, I didn't like Roosevelt because I listened to Superman every day, and they cut the Superman radio.
That's un-American.
And to report that the president had died.
Oh, wow.
I thought that was a terrible indiscretion.
So you want
joking,
Superman
of course. But most of my family were Democrats of some sort.
Okay, so the issue at that time was just, it was a lineage thing, you just wanted to follow in their footsteps?
I heard lots of debate among my family, and some of it pretty absurd, of course, but there were the, quote, Southern Democrats who were largely racist involved. And then there were a few Roosevelt Democrats who didn't broach that issue. My father, my grandfather, and my great-grandfather were all members of the Ku Klux Klan.
Here in Texas. Wow.
And it is strange because early on, I was confused about this. And I'm not trying to say that I'm super moral, but I just didn't understand it.
Right,
it didn't make any sense to me. And one of the black young men across the county road came by one day and says, "How would you like to go rabbit hunting?" "Great." I went hunting. Came back and my mother said, "Your father's gonna have a talk with you when he gets home." It was not a moral issue at all to me. It was a nonsense issue. I didn't have any black rub off of me, and he didn't have any white rub off of me.
Right, absolutely.
So
just people.
It was confusing to me. And interestingly enough, when I got in junior high, I was allowed to debate the rest of the government class about the evolution to make blacks full citizen, because they weren't there.
Right. Wow. So you picked up those social justice issues very early on.
Very early on.
Oh,
and it wasn't emotional or anything like that. It just it doesn't make any sense. Right. Of course, it became somewhat emotional as time rolled along.
Absolutely.
The southwest quadrant of Plano, Texas, which was around 2,000 population then, was the black portion of Plano.
Okay.
They got our worn out school buses, our worn out textbooks. Mm-hmm. Or they went to school in a, rather than a brick building, mm-hmm. a wooden structure. Mm-hmm. In every way, they were shortchanged and made light of by a lot of the townspeople. And the interesting thing to me was that we went to Merritt and Martin Barbershop to get our haircut. I had a brother who drowned, who was 2 years younger than me. And the people came in and they used the N-word. And,
at the barbershop.
And the man who shined shoes was the one that they referred to. Mm-hmm. And his name was Jim. But Fred and I refused to use that one. Mm-hmm. And it's really tells how bad things are when you get recognition because of what you don't do.
Right.
And Jim became attached to us because we didn't do it. And when my youngest son was born, my oldest son was born, while my mother was carrying him down Main Street in Plano, and Jim ran out and says, "Is that his boy?" And it's almost like welcoming the baby Jesus
like
in the world.
Right, right.
But later I did some study and found out Jim was a terribly remarkable person. Mm-hmm. He had been in World War I, and he had more or less adopted that whole quarter part of town because he did janitorial work, and the merchants and so forth gave lots of stuff to him as well as his pay. And he distributed for the people. And he said that his children, you know, everything he brought home, they wanted. But he said, "No, you got plenty. There are kids here that don't have anything." Mm-hmm. And he was the real savior of the black community at that time.
Wow. Okay, so how would you, and he was one of your constituents, so how would you describe your first campaign coming into the legislature?
Well, I was a Kennedy supporter.
Okay.
And probably close to worshiping him, brilliance, youth, all of that. And he espoused what I stood for.
Okay.
And when he was assassinated, I was crushed.
Right.
It was almost like my nearest of kin had been assassinated. And the interesting thing was I was working at Texas Instruments plant on Lemon Avenue, and the motorcade came right down in front of the employees who were gathered out there. Mm-hmm. And when we got back into the plant and started working, they turned on the intercom and said, "We have some unfavorable news. The president was shot close to the Triple Underpass."
Oh, wow.
And, well, I have some trouble even today avoiding crying, but I cried like.
Yeah, that was an emotional moment for the entire country because he meant so much to people. So you took his legacy and you came here to the Texas legislature. And what was your first big issue or bill when you were a freshman here?
Well, I determined after the assassination that I wanted to do more than be just a citizen. So I didn't have money or name recognition, and I served two terms as Democrat precinct chairman. Mm-hmm. And then I determined to run for the legislature, and I suppose the interesting thing was that I'd made just enough noise that the Stemmons Cullum, the downtown crowd, didn't want me anywhere. And they spent big money to keep me from getting into the runoff, and actually switched 500 votes from me to the other guy in order to keep me out of the runoff.
Oh, wow.
And they, in turn, they exactly made a name for me because I didn't bend over and take it. I fought it to the courthouse and, and prevailed. And although I'd only gotten a little under 30% in the first primaries, I got almost two-thirds of the vote in the runoff because of the attempt to steal the election.
That's amazing. So you were a threat, and they were absolutely right because you didn't lay down. And so when you came here, describe you know, some of your memories with the speaker and the interactions while you were here.
Very true. I was sworn in 1969, and at that time there were only seven or eight, maybe 10 Republicans in the legislature. And I, because of the resistance of the, I guess you call it the establishment, I got media coverage all over the state.
Really?
So it was almost as if I was a second termer or something. When
right,
I
right.
came. Oh, you're that great, huh?
And this was as a freshman here.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And what kind of things were you speaking out against?
I'm sorry?
What kind of things, issues were you speaking out against to get that, that coverage?
I'll state that one more time.
So you got a lot of coverage here in Texas as a freshman. What do you attribute that to? Why did you think you got so much coverage?
Well, you know, people sort of come together in certain areas, and one of them is they don't want the ballot box tampered with.
Right.
And that was my enemy made me by trying to tamper with the ballot box.
Right.
And it was something that I carried with me in future elections because they tried to do me in and they really invented me.
So it was like a Plano Watergate.
Yeah.
Okay. So that experience, how did that transform you into a member of the Dirty 30 later on down the line?
Well, that was my second term, of course, but both the first and second time, the Speaker of the House was Speaker Mutcher, and he was terribly autocratic. And if you weren't a member of the team, you couldn't pass legislation and had to raise your hand to use the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
That's an exaggeration, of course.
No,
but
that's how
he treated those who wouldn't sign pledges. So that kind of invigorated me. The harder he would hit me, the more I would push back.
Right.
So I took on routine of watching for his real serious mistakes and speaking speeches of privilege or whatever, calling the public's attention to it. And of course, the rivalry just intensified.
Right.
And when the second term, the term that the feds had done some probing and they discovered a lot of the information about the Sharpstown thing that he got caught up in. And as it leaked out, why, it was obvious that he had been bribed.
Right.
So there were those of us who took on the role of pressing for justice.
Right.
And it almost stalled, but on the day that we actually got a vote on it, there were 30 members who voted for an investigation, mm-hmm. and that's where the term Dirty 30 came from. Okay. But the small loan shark lobbyists leaned over the railing and said, aha, the Dirty 30. And Tom Bass from Houston says, Dick, that's catchy. Let's go with that name.
Yeah.
So we all gathered and became the Dirty 30.
Wow. And you guys were in search of justice and bringing forth that investigation.
Exactly. And we pressed until was Smith the DA in Travis County? I think it's Smith. But we chunked away until the DA's office did the investigation and got him indicted and tried and convicted.
Right.
And that's the small picture of it, really, because there were, I don't know, probably 24 or so House members who had checked all of their funds out their last day in office, mm-hmm. in the form of postage stamps and purchased vehicles with them.
Oh, wow.
And I can't remember how many probably 20 or 25 members,
wow.
bought vehicles, mainly pickup trucks with postage stamps.
Right. Wow.
The joke around the Capitol was they knew how to curb that. They'd have the postage stamps for Capitol employees imprinted with the picture of a pickup truck. But there were probably more than a third, close to half of the legislature, mm-hmm. was caught doing something.
Right.
And at the next election, the public cleaned house.
Right.
Every statewide officer was turned out, and a majority of the legislators were turned out.
Right. And so what would you say the lesson learned there? I know we could see the big picture in hindsight, but being in the situation, what was the lesson learned there?
I don't know if I've learned it, or I don't know if we've learned it. It goes to the nature of we human beings when we reach for more than we're entitled to, and we abuse others in going after it, there is at least some risk,
right.
that you'll have to pay the price for it.
Yes, sir.
And of course we want the risk to be as high as possible.
Right. Yeah, to deter people from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So after your time and seeking justice and serving here, how was that transition out of the legislature to your new life after that?
Well, it's really difficult to say. Bullock ran for comptroller the following term, and we met in Dallas, and he asked me if I would like to join him when he was sworn in. I said, well, probably. So I worked 10 years, 11 years or so for the comptroller's office.
Oh, okay, okay.
And I believe that it was, it's one of the Austin media people.
Like the Austin Statesman or?
I'm not certain.
Okay.
But he referred to Bullock as being half crazy. And that is a reasonably adequate description of him. When he brought me aboard, he says, Okay, I want you to know one thing. I believe in firing people.
Oh, wow.
And if you don't fire people, I'll probably wind up firing you. And he fired people right and left, not necessarily for wrongdoing, but he thought that was the way to keep an organization
right.
on its feet.
Right.
To some degree it may have, but it also drained the go get them out of
Absolutely.
Employees too.
Yes, sir. So, sir, you're being summoned downstairs to walk across stage and meet your new colleagues and your former colleagues. But if you have any advice or wisdom to give to the current legislators, what would you tell them, sir?
Well, I'm not one of those blessed with wisdom. I'm old enough to have it, but it didn't take it.
Of course, yes.
Well, the main thing is, with every decision you make, make sure you consider its effect on the average citizen, because that's what you're here for.
Absolutely.
And it's awfully easy to get feel self-exalted and lose that awareness. I think we have a president who has demonstrated that pretty well.
Yes, sir. Well, is there anything that you want to leave everyone with, or anything that we didn't cover that you think is pertinent?
Well, I'll make a confession that my daughter and her husband built a deck on the front of her house, and there was a tree hovering over it that shed it all the time, but it didn't bother us until the deck was there. And my wife had me up there picking all of the loose stuff out of the tree, and I fell 40 feet to the ground.
Oh, wow.
And almost died.
Oh, wow.
And I was in Methodist Hospital for, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me at that time that even if you do the best you can, there are some things you really don't have total control of. You can be wiped out by an accident, by a failure to use good judgment, and so forth. So you ought to always keep awareness of what your real purpose is in society. And whether you're a member of the legislature or you pick up garbage, your real obligation is to the citizen.
Right.
And you should never forget that.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for being so courageous. Thank you for all the work that you've done in the Texas legislature for the state of Texas, sir. And thank you for speaking with us today.
I never did think of myself as being courageous. I thought of myself as having impeached all of the rules by getting elected in the first place. And since that's happened, why waste the opportunity?
Right.
Do the things that you wanted to do.
Right.
And that's what I tried to do.
Thank you, sir. Let's see.